You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest Anfield Index Under Pressure podcast. My name's Dan Kennett, and with me to talk about Two clean sheets, my gosh, that's the highlight. And progress in the cup, to be fair. I have the full crew. I've got my namesake and our resident data collection expert, Mr. Daniel Rhodes. Rhodes, evening, Rhodesy.
Evening, mate. Didn't have to collect either of these games. Gags was on this one, and there is a story in it. But yeah, it was not much else to talk about from...
You must have had a pretty quiet weekend then. You don't know what to do with yourself.
I've got the Real Madrid and I've got one of the others as well.
Yeah. Anyway, and we do have the Dynamic Sports Science duo. First of all, he's back, just got back from Winter Nets. And I don't know if you've had time to get up to the Ivory Tower or not, Bart. How are you getting on, mate?
No, mate, the lift's not coming, you know.
Yeah. How are you doing, mate? Looking forward to talking about this one, I guess.
Yeah, definitely Chelsea game, definitely.
Yeah, I know there's some interesting tactical stuff to get into for sure. And he doesn't know what we're going to talk about, but he's turned up anyway. It's Mr. Simon Brundish.
Evening, boys. Who doesn't love Monday night pod?
Yeah. Training off tonight?
No, we're training.
Okay.
Freeze my nuts off at training, but we're training.
Do you want to have a word on the Liverpool Chelsea ladies show?
Yes, let's do that. That is utter garbage.
How does that actually happen? How do you actually play the game for 6 minutes and then cancel it?
Well, I think largely what we're right at now, the inception, the crossover point of the 80s of men's football.
Is that where women are?
I think we're in different facets of the game, but I think we're at different points of time. But I think with the women have quickly jumped to the 80s, a comparison of men in terms of media and TV and money. And the money and TV coverage jumped so far in 2 years from nowhere to let's put it on every game as much as we can for basically Chelsea, but the big teams. And they don't have the facilities that cope with it. That's basically it. So instead of playing it at the main men's grounds, they play at lower league grounds.
Yeah. No under soil heating.
Exactly. So the lower leagues aren't funded very well. What they should do is, I saw a stupid, what's that word? Where people ask for you to sign a petition. So an online petition by a woman footballer said, sign this for undersoil heating at women's stadiums. Absolutely nonsense. It was stupid. It's a stupid idea. It's about the 450th thing that should be funded in the women's game. It will cost millions. And there are so many things that are way, way more important that are already massively underfunded.
Yeah.
What they should do is make sure that they either play at the men's ground, because the argument is always going to be, it digs up the pitch. So it ruins it for the men's game. But why is it okay for the lower league teams to have their pitch dug up for somebody else's club to play there? It's not cool. So that's what they should do. But in this case, they basically went, the pitch is frozen on one half of the pitch. They put blowers on the night before to warm it up. And in the morning, there was still a quarter of the pitch was totally iced. And at 9:30 inspection, the ref said, game's off. TV went, no. So they went, well, maybe we can look again at 2. Kickoff was 12:30. As far as Matt was concerned, the Liverpool women's manager was like, okay, so we come back at 12:30. He found out at 11:30 the game was going ahead. So they all piled out and started warming up and were like, this pitch is terrible. They kicked off at 12:30 as they were supposed to. There have been 30 falls, slips in the first 6 minutes. 30.
Wow.
So the ref called it off because it's dangerous. I've never seen it like that. Like in men's game,
we legitimately blame Sky TV for this? Is it Sky or was it BT?
BBC.
Was it BBC?
Yeah, I think it's just a function of where we're at. I don't think it's anybody's fault. I don't like.
I think we can blame TV.
Yeah, I do blame them. But this is just because the game has grown so rapidly.
Yeah.
That's all. It's just.
But it's old school.
Somebody should have had the balls to go, no.
It was actually sub-zero overnight. One of the coldest nights in the UK, and there's been in a year. And it was just early morning frost. And what was old school? Yeah. So
it was
anyway.
Just properly frozen on a bad pitch. And
anyway,
but from a coach's perspective, I was we had a game called off, and I was furious. So like that, they are fighting against that.
Yeah.
Were there any injuries, Si?
No, thankfully. Good. But it's incredibly lucky.
Yeah,
the no injuries.
Sounds it.
Yeah.
Sorry, does any of this feed into the FA banning top flight games being played on 3G?
Yeah, probably. The game would probably have gone ahead on 3G, but our game was called off on 3G. So you just.
No, I'm just saying.
Well, our first team played on grass. No, they didn't. It was 3G. Yeah, our first team played on 3G, but. My team, the devs, our academy team, our game was cancelled.
You're in a championship, right?
Yeah.
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 There you go. There's a nice insight from inside the game into the current state of women's top flight football in the UK. Anyway. So, Si, I'm going to have to make you talk about Wolves and Chelsea now, unfortunately.
Jesus Christ, I barely remember that garbage.
Right. Wolves was... so long ago that what we're only going to do is we're going to use the Wolves game as the lead into the Chelsea game. In terms of the starting point for the pod is going to be the Brighton pod, the Brighton game, Liverpool completely broken, completely annihilated on the pitch, a complete shambles of performance, trying to do the same thing that we've done for many years and getting nowhere near to executing the required level and being absolutely torn to shreds by Brighton. And then what changes have we made? Did we make in response to that? And starting with Wolves and then continuing into Chelsea. So that's going to be the context of this pod. So slightly different. And the pod's going to be finishing off by looking forward to the next game, which is away at Brighton. So, slightly different, but hopefully it works out anyway. Let us know how you think we did at the end of the show. Right, okay, so we are going to start with those lineups. Si, 8 changes for Wolves. Everybody on the BBC, Danny Murphy and somebody else saying, oh, Liverpool taking a gamble here, that's a lot of changes, blah, 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 blah. How much of it was the normal rotating in the sort of kind of youth and kind of reserve options, and how much of it was Brighton was just so catastrophic, doing nothing was not an option.
I think we got the first double game week for since the World Cup, basically. And he'd been rolling the same lads out and out and out and out, and a couple of them picked up injuries. And so I think we've got basically three injuries to significant players. So that brought in, that got rid of Trent, that got rid of Hendo, that got rid of Darwin. Then you're left with what you're left with.
Well, Darwin missed Brighton, of course, as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I suppose. But from what first team we had.
Yes.
Then, so you basically got Mo that was leveraged out, and Robbo. But then there's the Fab thing midweek as well. So it was a little bit of the Caribou Cup rotation in there, I suppose.
Yeah.
Seems sensible to me more than anything.
Yeah.
It would have been more sensible to me if we'd have done it in the first game.
First Wolves game, cup game.
Yeah.
And then for the Chelsea match, five changes from Brighton to Chelsea. So lots and lots of talk leading up to the match site about, you know, there was an improved performance against Wolves. You know, what's it going to say about the team, the pecking order within the dressing room? You were pretty active on social, on your Twitter feed after the Wolves game about some of the selections in midfield. A lot of talk about meritocracy, Si. Later maybe turns out, is it, so question is, how much of this is a meritocratic, of the Chelsea game was a meritocratic selection? How much was still circumstantial?
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch and those must-have fan threads? Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
When the team was announced, it felt like the wave of goodwill after the Wolves game, which probably result and having a thunder bastard felt better than it actually processes changed was. Yes. And that you can get caught up in the midfield. But it definitely looks something positive. And so that them, including Bajatic, I think if Naby had kept his place, it would have been less thought of. It would have been less of a big deal. But with Bajatic starting as well, it felt much more like, oh wow, okay, you get to, and Harvey, who reputedly had a good game, so it looks like okay, the these are being rewarded for after a good performance. And then it turns out after the game that Trent and Hendo were injured, and Darwin had only trained once as well, so none of those boys could have come back in. So you got Bajatic and Fab had only had two training sessions a week. Trent had had one. Darwin had had one.
But they were fit enough for the bench?
Numbers, yeah.
Okay. So maybe not the whole meritocracy thing that people were making it out to be yet.
Maybe none of that meritocracy yet. But let's hope that it's going to remain. Who knows?
So what we'd need to see in order to conclude it's a meritocratic selection based on, you know, you come in, you made a difference, you made an improvement in some respects, will be the next match.
Yes. My feeling is that you need to have three consecutive games you need to be given the opportunity to know you're playing three consecutive games. So that you can bed into the team and have alleviates pressure. If you're just going to get right, he played badly for 10 weeks, and then now you're going to get a game. What you're going to end up is a lad trying to take 12 players on and having an abomination of a football match, and then it just gives the manager an excuse to rotate him straight out.
Yeah. But so the Chelsea game was five changes from Brighton. which were Matip, Trent. You said Trent was injured in the week. Fabinho also injured. Henderson also injured. And then the last one was
Darwin.
No, from the Brighton match. Five changes from the Brighton match to Chelsea. Help me out, boys.
Go on, Matip didn't play.
Yeah, no, I mentioned him. Matip, Trent, Fab, Hendo, and one other.
Be somewhere up front, wasn't it? Who played wide left?
Yeah, Ox. So yeah, there were the five changes from Brighton to Chelsea. Rosie, your thoughts on the two games and the selection changes from?
It was needed. As I says, I don't think we can conclude yet that it's a meritocracy. Although playing two games in that space of time, and when we still needed a lot of running again, you might have thought there would have been a bit more rotation from the Wolves Cup game, but he stuck with them. We'll come on to the stats, Dan, because it's hard to conclude whether we want to see much more of it.
Yeah, we'll do that in a minute. But yeah, just on the lineups. So you were happy to see the two lineups. You thought that, you know,
it was hard to. It's looking now like there's injuries, but there's no way it could have picked the same team that played against Brighton because they were that bad.
I agree.
So the shock was that it didn't.
Yeah,
back more for the Chelsea game, but then, like Si says, they were injured, so they couldn't come in anyway. So we don't know.
That's the thing. I mean, how much of this is players? Players were genuinely injured, Bart. So what do you reckon? Do you reckon they all were injured, or do you reckon it was injured egos, or do you reckon it was actual injuries?
I trust Si's information that they only trained once a week, but I do also think the Wolves game was an easy throwaway. From Brighton, you had to do something, yeah? It just so happened he had a cup game. So he could have done something, made a statement as he did. It didn't really matter.
Yeah.
Right? The big thing for me was he kept that lineup for Chelsea because we've seen him before where they've trained not a lot and played. Do you know what I mean? There's been people come off planes and played the next day. So I get what Si's saying, and I don't believe it is a full meritocracy until the two young, the youngster, the kid, and Naby Keita place in the next game. If that happens over a sustained period, then fair enough.
Yeah.
Up front, I think generally we're just putting jerseys out. You know, I don't think we've got that many options. Yeah, I just think Harvey, he had an all right game against Wolves, so therefore he's in over Ox, who didn't have a great game against Brighton. So do you know what I mean? Whereas Gap and Mo, you're not going to drop them, are you? So, and the back line, I think Matic probably the only one we. He didn't have a great game against Brighton. Gomez needs to come back in. He would have played the cup game anyway.
Well, he didn't have a great game against Villa in the first game back.
No, but what I'm saying is he would have played the cup game. So he played the cup game and he did all right, I think. He was okay. So therefore, they went, all right, fair enough. I just think there's a little bit of a... I think Si said it's in between. It'd be interesting to see what happens on the third and fourth game. I mean, I was happy with the lineup because I think something had to change. But we'll come on to some of the problems it's caused maybe on the ball.
Yeah.
If that's a word, you know.
Yeah. So next game is Brighton, which is next Sunday and in the FA Cup. And after that, it's the following week again. Is that right? For Wolves in the league? Is that it?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Because we play like Wolves, Chelsea in double times in the same sort of periods. And Brighton, it's like we play the same three sides in the next sort of run of games, which is really weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's talk about... Okay, as well as the changes of personnel, Si, let's start. There's a lot to talk about in terms of the changes of game plan, I think. How did you see? Let's go through those things that we saw in the two fixtures, the Wolves game and the Chelsea game, in terms of our change in our game plan and across the four phases of play.
So I think across the midfield, we lined up in the way that we have done and we've practiced for the last 3 years, really, or 4 years, 5 years even. But I think the emphasis of the game was to stay compact. So Naby would get ahead of the ball, but he would only get ahead of the ball once we'd got solid possession of the game. So it was really third pass, then he would make a movement to go ahead of the ball. And I think that was triggered by Gakpo dropping. So we were making sure we were going security first in midfield. And they were making very, very tight like movements together. So they were always 12, 15 meters apart. They were never further apart than that. So one move, they all moved together. There were much less rotation between the front three and the midfield than we typically have. We usually have those triangles out wide that rotate amongst themselves. So sometimes Trent goes in, sometimes Hendo goes out, sometimes Mo drops deep, or previously Ginny would have dropped, Robbo would have gone, Mane would have come in. We're having much less of those rotations in the triangles out wide. So we were being a more rigid midfield, which allowed us to secure possession and stop the counter-attack through the middle. I think that's largely the goal. Is any negative transition is to limit the negative transitions as much as possible. So it's to force play with possession less, or be more deliberate and slower in when we make that. So we either launch the ball 40 yards over the top, of which we already have 10 men behind the ball, or we wait until we've got a solid structure before we try the incisive pass. So it comes off, it makes us look less creative, but it makes us more solid against the negative transition.
Which has been a weakness all season.
It's been our biggest weakness this season, isn't it?
Yeah.
We give the ball away at impromptu moments, at times when we didn't expect, and we aren't set. That, I think that's the two biggest weaknesses we have.
Yeah. But continuing the game plans, a couple of big ones, I suppose, is that both matches we saw Harvey Elliott in the front three and Cody Gakpo in what used to be called the Bobby role.
Yeah.
How do you think those things worked, and what was the plan there with those two players?
I think we've chatted about this a bit. I think with the midfield three taking the protect option rather than be an option, you know, we talk about protect or be an option,
think, be protection. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were taking more protect and they were playing in a very tight area. I think Gakpo being up front, as we've seen some of the analysis that you guys have done beautifully, is he sort of shut that front zone off. So he helped the back three behind by stopping the vertical passes out from the back straight into the opposition's midfield area,
yeah,
which helped. I'm not entirely convinced Harvey. I think from some of the press maps you guys have done and I've done, I think Harvey was, the left side wasn't as in sync as the right. He was often in the same sort of areas as Robinson was, which I'm not sure was the plan. If you look at where the difference between Milner, Naby and Mo, they overlap, but not to the degree which Elliot and Robinson do. So I think there's a tweak there, but then he's a kid, he's playing his wrong foot. I don't know whether some of that comes into it. But I think Gakpo, it's a cost benefit, isn't it? Because clearly off the ball, Gakpo is better than Nunes. Yeah? Or seemingly better than Nunes. He stopped for the moment. We have to stop conceding goals. We have to stop the easy goals being scored, which is walking for our centre midfield. So Gakpo stopping that sort of, that zone 14 we talk about, defending in that area, stopping the vertical passes through that area into the opposition forwards or into the opposition eights so they can turn on the ball and attack our six. That him doing that is more beneficial than having a player who can go the other way and definitely score, if that makes sense. So I think it's a bit of a trade-off at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
which is fair, which is fine. Yeah, it's just we have to accept that, you know.
Yeah, and we're not saying that Cody Gakpo is like Bobby Firmino in respect of leading a counter press and leading a game. You know,
he's still learning. It's first start.
Yeah, he's not going to be the, you know, proactively going after the opposition, and it was a very, very much a defensive role, dropping back almost into the midfield as that first line of defence. It was almost like, can you think Who could we call out as a defensive nine? The obvious one is Park Ji-sung, right? In the old Alex Ferguson Man United team, right? Sorry,
but there's Bobby Stanley as well.
Park didn't play nine, but yeah. I get he's Gakpo so far has been exactly what I envisaged, and we talked about on the pod. Me knowing very little about him and being entirely generalizing about players from Holland. He has been Dirk Kuyt.
Yeah.
He knows where to be. It's mechanical. And it's the opposite of Darwin and Diaz.
Yeah.
He's technically good, isn't he? He's just, he hasn't got
maybe team first. He's tactically good. I've no idea if he's technically anything. I've not seen him do anything with the ball. But he's tactically appropriate. I don't even know if it's good. He's tactically appropriate.
Yeah. So, in terms of playing a tactical defensive role as a nine, can we think of anybody, if we're not going to say Park Ji-sung then, is there anybody else who you think, open question, who are we looking at as a template for this?
Stefan Givarch.
France 1998.
Ooh, that's a
shout. Giroud, yeah.
Yeah.
Havertz does it. He's just not got the height, has he?
Oh, Havertz is tall.
Havertz is tall.
Yeah, defo. I reckon, yeah.
But isn't he just another Peter Crouch in that he is bigger than... Like, he spends the... Like, Darwin's the same. They spend the whole time going, I'm not big.
Yeah.
I'm not heading the ball just because I'm big. What are you talking about? I'm not heading the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well...
So they look big, but they don't behave like they're big.
No. No, definitely not. Okay.
But this is better. Like breaking down Gakpo from you guys, it would have been great. The stuff that Gags collected with the pressing, I think that's really appropriate to make judgments of what he's doing. You're saying he's a good defensive gap.
Saying in these two games, I think you have to acknowledge that
but
a tactical role, a defensive role. Just make us compact and difficult.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that this is it doesn't align with our usual timeline. But this is probably the best time to talk about what he was doing pressing wise, because that people don't have that
agreed
as evidence. Do you know what I mean? And that's exactly what we're talking about. That's probably the story of this game is what Gakpo did in pressing.
Yeah,
because I wasn't on watching the game and looking at numbers. The numbers are available to the world. I was not impressed by him, and I'm not being mean about him. I'm not making any judgment. I'm saying, but I can say I wasn't impressed by him. That doesn't mean to say I think he's rubbish.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. So I think on the ball, I think off the ball performance, having looked at numbers, having looked at the summer stuff that's been done on him from our data. I think this is a good performance from him. On the ball is a different matter.
Yeah. Okay, so let's do the Gakpo stuff now. This made the times today, by the way, for everybody.
Yeah, I know. Well done.
So I know you're not on Discord anymore. You retired off Discord, I think is the word. Yeah.
I actually dropped in the other day.
Did you really?
It's because it's such a ball ache to get in and the security and blah, 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 but I got in.
Okay, nice. Right, I put it in the chat for you so you can have a look at it. So it made the time today, Rosie. So thank you. I mean, obviously, Gags collected this one, not you. But next time, it might be your collections that make the times as well.
Oh, the pressing got in the times.
Yeah. In our database. Yeah.
Yeah, the biz that Daft did early in the week. Well, yeah.
Hamza, who we see?
Hamza.
Yeah. Yeah. On the Tactics Weekly Pod. So, Rosie, remember Tactic. So Cody Gakpo, though, 85 minutes played, 54 presses. 54 presses is a lot. Okay, wait. So first thing we have to acknowledge is in this game, we only had 47% of the ball. So that's not very much. Liverpool normally have significantly over 50%, even against teams like Chelsea. So 54, but it's still good. Once you adjust for possession, it was 55.3 possession adjusted, right, per 90. That's the 10th highest match figure ever. So I think that is notable in itself, especially because I was questioning, you know, when we signed him about he didn't show anything in his data at all about off the ball. Shout out to Patrick on Discord, who did say that his PSV coach and his team actively discouraged this kind of style of play anyway. So it's a bit difficult to tell from the last year. So fair enough there. But yeah, Rosie, 10th highest average just in terms of volume. In you know that that's worth noting, isn't it?
Absolutely, and continues from a 40 plus amount last week when it was the highest.
That's right.
As well, the only concern is the amount of possession wins in, is in the dance. So there was two high value press wins in this. It was one last week.
Yeah. so it was like 47 last week, 55 this, so 101 to three exactly
possession wins. This is exactly what you were talking about. He's doing that defensive role of he's pushing them back. He's not winning the ball. He's just stopping them from passing through him. Literally doing that because there's 90% efficiency in this. He's not winning it back through a like a Firmino tackle where he wins it and then on the counter. He's not forcing them into making an error. It's forcing them to turn sideways and knock it to one of their players. And that's basically what he's done.
Yeah, the, and the way the Gags...
And against Wolves as well, but we haven't got those for stats.
Yeah, and the way the Gags... And I'm sure if we'd have collected Wolves, we didn't. Sorry, listeners, we didn't collect Wolves FA Cup. But we were talking about it, though, in the group, weren't we, after the match, Rosie? We were saying, should we collect this game? Because we were watching it. We think there's, you know, there was potential the same story there, I think. It's fair to say, isn't it, Rosie?
Well, it was just a huge improvement on the Brighton pressing performance, which was the worst one.
Yeah.
So, it was always, well, you would think it was always going to improve, but the fact that he's now taken on a role like that, and I can see why he's gone with that tactic, but I'd still like to see him on the left where he's been so successful this season. And then,
yeah, but maybe we need to stop the bleeding. We need to stop the bleeding first.
Yeah. And it worked because in both games, I'm not sure we created many where we were passed through the middle. On the part, there was set piece, big chances conceded, but I'm not sure we had the ones that repeatedly Brighton did.
Yeah. And the way Gags described it as well, Rosie was very nice in his analysis. He said that you know Gakpo would cut off the easy pass from the centre backs into the middle, force them to go wide, and he would be backed up by Thiago and Naby in a kind of almost like a triangle. He was the tip of the triangle and those two behind him would then cut off the passing lanes into those options. So Chelsea would have to, those three players were actively trying to funnel Chelsea out wide. And then we'd launch onto those. Like Salah would join in and Elliott would join in and et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that Milner had, because obviously the fullbacks are important in that, Milner had 100% efficiency after.
Yeah. And Robertson.
And then, side, looking at your possession control, that's a horrendous figure for Milner, isn't it? What was his figure
for the match?
His possession control in this game -20 or something.
Yeah, it's terrible because that's because of where he's playing. Trent's is always really really low because he does the longer passes. But Milner had one of 11 crosses. That'll do it for you.
Yeah. There's -10 straight away on the possession control. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. So, Bart, what did you think on the pressing stuff, and in terms of the system?
No, I agree with what Rosie said. I think he had a large volume, didn't he, to stop him from moving around, and I think it actually marries in with some of the pass networks. There's not a lot of vertical passes into Havertz. You know what I mean, the thick lines are around our centre area, which kind of backs up what you guys are saying about Gakpo blocking that off. So there's no vertical passing. They've had to go sideways into Shalaba. And I can't even pronounce the left-sided centre-half.
Badiashile. Yeah.
Yeah, who then would go into Hall. And I mean, I think that also led to Zilic got the highest XT in the game, or APV. He was their out ball, which is on our left, which is Harvey's side as well.
Mm.
So, whereas the rest are all kind of a lower, they're nowhere near the blue, if you like, for a higher APV value. So, yeah, the pass networks and who's got the highest APV and XT, whatever you want to call it, matches with what you're saying about how our midfield three worked with Gakpo to stop the balls into the middle. I think typically Jorginho and Gallagher have been working really well as a two in there. And they're very low colours in terms of their production. It's not forwards, it's sideways.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to worth noticing, all our three midfielders, considering it was a 47% possession game, in the past, Rhodes, you'll know this from the games you've collected, when we have 47% possession, the three centre midfielders will have 30, maybe 35 presses each, yeah?
Yeah, it's really strange, the lack of volume that they've got in this game, isn't it?
Yeah, so
Kater, just looking at the gaps on the heat map.
Kater 18, yeah. Thiago 17, Bacicic 16. But it's more to do with what Si was saying. I think there was more coordination of the three midfielders moving together. And it was basically marking and closing off Chelsea options. So they were man-marking Chelsea players, but they were never actually getting to press because their man wasn't even getting the ball. So it was there's the kind of stuff that wouldn't even get counted, not even with our pressing data.
They're blocking zones off. If you look at the zone map, they work really well to on the right side specifically to create a massive zone to say you can't come through the middle here. The left is there's a little gap between Thiago, Gakpo and Elliot, as I've said.
Yeah.
But they work really well at stopping that ball in.
And I think the other thing about Gakpo's press map and Chelsea game, I don't think I've ever seen one that disciplined. Literally just a line across a strip of the pitch.
Just half space to half space.
Yeah, shuttle runs almost there across the pitch and lateral. I mean, because obviously when it was Bobby playing the role in his pomp, Bobby would be all over the place. He'd be hunting deep into the penalty area and all over the final third, linking with, hunting impacts with Mane and Mo. But this is a very different kind of role.
It seems deeper second half. I don't know, Rhodes, whether you know, he didn't collect it, sorry, but the area of his press in the second half is a lot larger.
Right.
Double the size as first half.
Yeah.
So I think we're different.
I think we did. Yeah, the shape did change after we made the Kater sub. So,
That's true.
But yeah, so I'll check out the Anfield Index Discord all the times for more. But it was very noticeable that the other nine outfield players all pressed in the half space or to the outside of the half space, not in the central zone. Literally the only player pressing in that central zone of the pitch was Gakpo. Everybody else was holding positions and then pressing to the outside. So, yeah, a very, very different approach to what we've seen off the ball. So, do you think the relative success of it, which I'm going to say relative success because the XG doesn't say it was an unqualified success, do you think it might mean we might persist with this approach, even if the personnel change?
Well, I don't know, because Hendo came on and then became prime Lallana again. So who knows whether it's by design, whether it's because of the personnel or supposedly the training camps that we had and all this stuff, but we carried on doing the same thing after the training camps. Who knows? And who knows how much it is we've actually changed something deliberately, or it's just the opposition we've played against in the last two games. I don't know. Because relatively, Wolves and Chelsea are fairly tepid in attack.
Well, they're both very similar. They're both possession-orientated, nice technical teams, nice midfielders, yeah?
They're our possession.
Yeah,
And they're the opposite of Brighton in the Brighton go man for man, which is in their defence, and they don't. And there's a whole lot of tactical rotation that Chelsea do off the ball. Like I don't know if Bart's has been, but being exposed to the pro license, and it's, There's like a hipster thing going on. Like the influence of Pep is absolutely
it's mental.
And watching
that's Guardiola, not Linders, by the way.
Yeah, well, watching young coaches, or not necessarily even young with Graham Potter, but like English coaches, and the way they impose tactical rotations on defenses and in possession of how you gain how you gain ground in the through the zones from a goal kick. It's the same whilst being there, whilst it looks like it makes them feel like they're being unique in what they're doing. Like they're adding all of this extra fluff of midfield fullbacks and wing rotations to gain 3 yards of space outside of the penalty box. And Chelsea do it like incessantly. What they're doing with their, what's he called? Hall?
Potter, yeah, Potter,
the kid plays left back sometimes.
Yeah,
his interchanging through the four phases. Sometimes he was playing centre mid, tucked in alongside Jorginho. Sometimes he was going playing in behind Cucurella, and sometimes he was the furthest presser on the left hand side ahead of Mount. Seeing his movement numbers would be interesting, but like how they interacted. And then Chalobah, you could hear them rambling on about the formation changing because they weren't quite sure what was going on. Oh, he's going 4-3-3. No, he's going to 3 at the back again. And they weren't at all. That just depended on where who had the possession and where the ball was. They just had different shapes. They'd, like Chalobah would go and play like almost right wing. Or basically what he would do is go and cover whoever was Harvey. And because Harvey was dropping so deep, it looked like he was playing right wing. And so he was going man for man, which allowed Silva to come across and cover all of that in behind because we didn't have any forwards. Anyway, that they were so fluid at the back, it's stupid to try and man mark them. You just go and block the zones and it stops them playing out, basically. So it made sense for us to be really, really rigid in midfield and stop them passing through us because they and see what they can do from the wings, putting crosses into that lad who's 6'2" up front who doesn't ever head the ball. So, yeah, good luck with that. So I don't know whether we're in a long-winded way, whether it's we're making judgments of this team or the things that have happened in these games are because of opportunity and injuries that have made us a little bit tighter.
Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have 3 podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on EPLindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin DeVries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable, there every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Rosie, I mentioned that we don't want to call it unqualified success and far from it, and you're going to tell us why now, because can you give us both the match summaries?
I'll give you a brief one for the FA Cup. We had 7 shots to their 11, 3 shots in the box to their 8, and we both had 2 shots on target each. They had 1 big chance. We didn't have any. We ended up with 0.16 non-penalty XG. This is just one model, by the way, and they had 1.53. So that was a bit of a beating on the XG, a minus.
I think 1.1 of it was in the last 6 minutes, I think. Yeah. Is that right?
And it did.
Well, there's a big lack of data on this match, I think, because of that floodlight failure thing, isn't it? It knocked everything out, I reckon.
I know the White Scout one had it. Was on 0.4 and was on 1.7. So, yeah, it was all towards the end of the game. But then we'll come on to the Chelsea one. And Although we had more shots, 15 to 11, 10 shots in the box to 9, 3 shots on target to 2, and 36 touches in the box to 25, they had 1.7 XG to our 1.3. They also had 4 big chances to 0. That is the... We've conceded a minus 4 big chance difference twice before at home. That was against Man City and Spurs in the COVID season. So we've never conceded 4 big chances and not created one at Anfield under Klopp. So that's the first thing that happened with fans there. It's also the second time that we've gone 2 consecutive games without having a big chance, because the Gakpo one got removed. That was the header from the Bešetić knockback. In Klopp's first season, towards the end of it, when we were doing a lot of rotation, we had a 1-0 win and a 0-0 draw against Watford and Southampton, and we didn't create a big chance in either.
That was the Emre Can bicycle kick.
It was. That definitely wasn't a big chance.
No, definitely not.
So that's the only time it's happened. The only time we've had 2.
So the Chelsea big chances were the early one for Thiago Silva hitting the post.
Yes,
from the set piece.
The goal disallowed, yeah.
There was the Badashiel saved by Ali from the set piece.
Another set piece, yeah.
There was the Mudrick one with the twinkly feet.
Yeah.
Just into the side netting.
Yeah.
And then there was the Mudrick one where he didn't get the shot away, but no. He was clean through and he miscontrolled it out of play, yeah.
And it goes down as a missed opportunity. That's why you might think it's weird that he's got 2 big chances and only 1 shot.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but it was a big opportunity.
Yeah, it definitely was.
So, there's not actually that much to be cheered about in the match summaries, is there, Rudy?
Not going forward, no. And even we're still looking at, I think, one of the crucial factors that we talked about on the half season review, or just under half season review, was shot quality, and we have conceded more than the average shot, which is about 10%. Going backwards, we've conceded 16% against Chelsea, 13 Brighton, 21 Brentford, 15 Leicester, 14, 15, 13, 12, 23 against Forest, 18 against West Ham, and then 6% against Man City. That was the last time we conceded less than the average shot quality. We're still conceding high quality.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we carry on doing it, we've got 0 chance of top 4.
Well, I think we got pretty much 0 chance of top 4 anyway.
I don't.
Okay. 1%.
I think we're about 20%, is it?
Okay.
That's 4-5. Yeah, but I have a say.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we've got 29%. We've got half a season to go, and we have players that have demonstrated they are brilliant. The statistical projection of us, the likelihood of Liverpool's team playing this shit going on a run is very, very low. The likelihood of Mo catching fire and winning us 10 games out of the next 19, which is enough to get us into the top 4 potentially. I don't think that's unlikely. I think it's very possible, because we've seen it many times before. It doesn't look great, but we statistically know it's very possible. That's all. That's basically where I would go. I would go on the we have a chance where some of our brilliant players might go on a wave like Matty did.
Yeah.
And that's our one remaining hope.
You've got to kind of balance that where there's more sides in front of us now than it was when we went on the last run.
Well, I don't care about the size in front of us. I don't think it's particularly good. But if we get 2 points per game from this point out, I think we end up in top 4. I think this team is. I don't think it's beyond realms of possibility that we can a couple of our brilliant players catching fire is enough to carry this team. As long as Ali carries on doing what he's doing, if a couple of brilliant players and catch fire, it's possible. And I don't think it means that this team can be good long term. if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's
for 10 games or for 15 games, it's possible Trent and Mo are brilliant.
And we get, I don't know, Jota back or something like that.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, it's possible that Darwin goes on a crazy run of actually converting.
He is going to at some point. And you just hope it's at the most opportune moment.
Or Gakpo does. I mean, how many shots did he have that last game?
Seven,
right?
Seven in 85 minutes. That's a lot.
That's a lot, right? So if one of those goes in, we win the game at the weekend.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, or, I mean, or at some point, we get Mo to have some actual chance.
Also shots, yeah.
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 So if we win the game in hand, which is a big if at the moment, we are 7 points behind Newcastle and Man United, and we have to overtake one of those two teams.
Yeah. Unequivocally, we need luck to get through.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if this is the hottest run Newcastle are on and they'll drop off.
Yeah, but yeah, if we have to, there's no question we have to beat United at Anfield.
I was going
to
say that's the thing for Newcastle, the game we've got against them is at their place.
Yeah, right? Have to win United. That as well, pretty much.
But you beat one of them, didn't you?
That's when you're talking about, like, it's easy for us to fall back into the mentality that we've had because we've had to beat every XYZ, single game because of City. And I don't think that's the case. I think from this point on, 2 points per game gets us fourth. And I don't think... So you can lose games and still get there.
What I'm saying is 7-point gap. So we got to win the head-to-heads with those two teams.
No, because they're going to lose games is what I'm saying.
Okay.
So I think it's possible that this is like... just rewind your brain back to the 80s. I think this is going to be 80s football till the end of the season.
Yeah, and yet we win the game in hand, Darth, and we beat United. It's only 1 point difference between us and United. You only have to knock off one of them.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Which is why 538 has got us at 20%.
I think we're above the projections. I think the likelihood of it happening is very, very possible. I just don't see it.
Dan, I said in that review pod that Mo and Nunes had to catch fire and we had to start conceding fewer than one big chance. We haven't shown anything like that happening yet. But if it does from now, then I do think we get top four.
Got to reduce that shot quality as well, I mean, righty.
I just can't. It just doesn't look like we're going to suddenly go on a run of five games and concede four big chances. It looks like we're going to concede three or four every game.
The weird thing is, I didn't think we looked like we could see in this game. I know we conceded that many big chances, but there were some set plays, weren't there? I didn't see us.
Yeah, no, this was much.
You know what I mean? This is better, right? Whereas Brighton, it was like, oh god, we're going to concede another attack.
We play Newcastle on the 18th, Saturday, the 18th of Feb, away 5:30, and we play United on the 4th of March.
What time is that game?
Saturday. It's not been announced. There's no TV yet for the March fixtures onwards. So yeah. But it'll be moved for TV, you guarantee it, won't it?
It'll be Sunday, won't it? Sunday, 4 o'clock.
Yeah. So both of them we get in the next 6 weeks. So anyway, right. Let's talk about those trade-offs then. Rosa, you mentioned the attack there, obviously the big one. The Wolves game, yeah. It was a tough watch, wasn't it, going forward?
It was nothing. It was just the Elliott goal and a couple of three or four outside the box and then maybe one inside. Didn't look like scoring. And let's be brutally honest, I think the poor shot XG on Elliott's shot was 12%.
Yeah.
Turn it into that much
of a big effort. Surely that's got to be close to a goalkeeper error for his position in there.
Oh, absolutely.
He's like, 14, 15 yards out?
Yeah, and it goes into the middle of the goal.
Yeah. So, I mean, a good spot from Elliott to see him so far. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's not taking anything away from him, but you would be annoyed if your keeper conceded a goal like that. It was a 1% chance.
What a 1% chance. Si, I think you said that Carvalho, Elliott and Gakpo was the slowest Liverpool front three since Hodgson. Did you say that?
He definitely said that.
Brundish, you're on mute, or your trackpad's gone, one or the other.
It was definitely a slow front three, Darth. Also, none of our shots were in the width of the goal.
Yeah, nightmare.
which is
yeah, we kept shooting over. That thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, I'm chatting away here with my mute on.
We know you are.
We keep telling you. So,
Jesus Christ.
So, the slowest front three since what was it you said?
No, I don't think it was me that said it. But that's not very fast, is it? you just got these little, it's like Nick, I've come to terms with Fab being Nick Bombay.
Baby Fab.
Yeah, Baby Fab is Nick. Is Nick Bombay? Wow, that's his upside.
Oh my word! Ask your dad, kids.
Yeah, so there we go. We got Dumitrescu and Nick Bombay here, and they aren't very big.
So,
they're not going to outrun many lads, are they?
No.
Nah.
So you're probably right. I don't even know if that is. It goes back to the Hodge because they still. I would even have Kaut out running those two.
Would you?
Yeah.
Oh.
To be fair, Hodge had broken Torres, didn't he?
Lambert.
And N'Gog was.
N'Gog
was
Lambert.
Pretty quick as well.
Lambert.
N'Gog wasn't slow.
Hodge didn't have Lambert.
No.
That was Rodgers.
Yeah.
Did we have a Lambert, Lallana?
Barini.
Lambert, Lallana and Balotelli.
Yeah.
Not that Balotelli was quick, but Balotelli would choose not to bother to run.
Yeah. So we did change the front three for Chelsea, say. Mo came back for Carvalho. How did you see the trade-off in between trying to stay compact and the attack?
I think there are multiple trade-offs going right now. The significant one is the functionality in midfield. And I think if you embed that for 6 weeks, that really good positive things start to happen because there are some really good footballers there. And bring Trent in and you've got the connection there between back to front in a way that you don't when Milner's playing. Yeah. So I'm fine with that. Weirdly, right, I know Robbo is even kind of loosely finding form right now, if that's possible, I'm not sure. But in games Trent doesn't start, I think our team's better if Tsimikas starts because his passing's way better than Robbo's. So he connects midfield, it connects into midfield better. But anyway, I think the biggest cost of playing those short lads in this team is that they don't give chances right through our midfield, which happened as soon as Harvey went back to the midfield.
Modric.
They don't do that. So theoretically, we are protected against quick turnovers in the highest opportunity areas.
Mm.
But when they get through and we give away stupid corners, James Milner, that they can't head the ball anymore because you've got a team full of dwarfs and a giant who thinks he's a dwarf.
Yeah. So we had one good aerial player against Chelsea, and that was Ibrahim Konate. Yeah, Konate. Yeah. And so here's a question for you all, right? After Ibu, who was the second best header in that team?
Thiago.
Rosie?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, which is mad because he's like 5'9".
Yeah, but you look at Thiago at the moment in terms of his duels, both ground and aerial. He's an absolute monster at the moment.
Yeah.
He's winning. I can't find the image at the moment, but he's literally covering so much ground for someone who's supposed to be injury prone, touch wood. Yeah. And he's winning the ball at a really good rate. I mean, he is
comfortably our best player.
Yeah, he's comfortably. It's not even him and Ali are in a competition for their own player of the year.
Yeah, but if you want. What I'm trying to say is, we have to acknowledge he is playing well, but, you know, if he's your second best header of the ball in the Premier League in a defensive sure. play team,
yeah, it's stupid,
you're in a bit of trouble, aren't you?
If you go back to our setup that is brilliant, historically been brilliant from set pieces defensively, you've got Robbo as the front screen, Robbo's still there. You've got Matip on the front post. In the front zone.
Bobby mid-zone.
And you've got, Gomez replaced in that. Bobby mid-zone, and that has been Hendo, which is rubbish. Or Gakpo now. And I'm telling you, I don't understand. He just...
Van Dijk back zone.
And then Van Dijk at back zone. So now you've got
Fab screen right in front.
Way more ball dominant than Van Dijk. So Ibu will leave his zone to go and head the ball. So he is much more of a prototypical. You put him in the middle of the box and say go and head it, and everyone else stays where they are. That's what I would do with him because that he innately wants to do that every time.
Yeah,
but he's probably in this situation the best thing to do because he's the only one that wants to head the ball.
Yeah,
but Gakpo completely missed it. He tried to head it, didn't he?
Oh yeah, he did.
Yeah.
That was quite weak. That was quite worrying, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because if he's in the mid zone from set plays, that is a critical.
They just need to run that, you know, the old train set play where they run two into an area and overload him and they'd score straight away.
Truck and trailer?
Yeah, it's truck and trailer. That's the one I'm talking about, yeah. Because if Gakpo's not going to win that, you've got two players in his zone to win the ball.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of the goal. That's dangerous. But yeah. you could plot against our three or four game, or we look a little bit shakier from set pieces than the rest of the immaculate brilliance over 3 years. When Bobby went through phases of, oh, he made stupid choices or he missed the headers, or it was typically down to Bobby.
Yeah.
And Jota was even kind of clean doing it. He probably a little bit less so than Bobby had been at his best, but like that's a significant trade-off at set pieces.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you solve that problem because theoretically you should be able to stick Darwin there and it should be good. So
if Darwin comes back in for Elliot on the left of the front three, that improves things, right?
Oh no, on paper it does. Because they have to actually head the ball. They don't.
Hmm.
So it looks like they're bigger than they are, but they don't head the ball. So you might as well.
I disagree. I think Nunes is very, very good in the air.
Yeah, he's got a couple of that, doesn't he?
Yeah,
but that's attacking. It's not defensively.
Yeah, I agree.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not. He doesn't jump in build up play. He makes terrible. He just. If there's a chance of him scoring from a header, he actually has quite a good skill with head.
Hmm.
But like that's like Michael Owen. Michael Owen's brilliant.
So you're saying there's work to do. So he's saying he's okay, but he's not good defensively from the set.
I'm saying he chooses not to jump for headers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
theoretically, our best team to put on the pitch for this. And if you think about it, historically, Klopp has picked as big a team as he can sometimes.
Yes.
Like at a choice.
Yes.
A lot of the time.
Yes.
It would be to have Matip and Ibu and Fab. And Darwin and Gakpo. And then on paper, you've got quite a big team.
Yeah,
Problem is, Matip is got 30% aerial wins this season.
Yeah.
Dropped from 69% average down to 30% aerial wins. Absolutely shocking. And one of the reasons why we get transitioned on all the time.
Yeah.
Fab's dropped, but only 5%, but he has dropped a little bit. Darwin just doesn't have the ball.
Gomez is better
than Darwin.
Gomez has always been mediocre by centre back standards.
He's like 50% aerial.
Yeah. He's not in the zone to do that from defensively.
No.
So,
he's just a blocker, isn't he?
He's just a blocker.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jota, basically the answer to the questions are Jota coming back will improve us on set plays at both ends. Nunes should improve us over Elliott. And then Van Dijk coming back from hamstring will improve us, obviously.
You counter if you take Elliot out of that side, right, and you put Nunes in the box, your breakaway from a counter is Mo, isn't it? We don't have anyone else because you haven't got the lack of space to break away is reduced, right? If you put him on your second
short, slow guy, lads in the team,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. So at the moment, there's a trade off, like I said, there's trade offs all over the place. Because we're having to go, right, we need height in the box, right, but that's also one of our quickest players. So we can't really, the counter will be easy to defend because they just defend Mo.
Yeah.
So you haven't got an
out. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. So if we break in that last match, you've literally got Mo 20 yards ahead of anybody else and hope Robbo catches him.
And then they'll just mark Mo. They'll just be like, right, he's the player. That's where the ball's going. Go on, and we'll mark him.
Whereas at least if you had Nunes in the team, it'd be two of them breaking.
Exactly. But then the counter trade-off is if we're weak, we're weaker in the box.
Yeah.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, mag boxes, and games consoles. Visit libertyshield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
So, yeah, we haven't got a perfect solution at the moment. It is Rafa's blanket.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you guys one thing about the other thing, which I thought was a big tactical change from Brighton. After Brighton, Klopp said amongst the many problems, was that we weren't compact enough. And I thought it was really interesting against Wolves and Chelsea that we kept the high defensive line. It is pretty much where it's always been. But the answer to make the team compact was to drop the front pressing line by about 20 metres. And go into this more defensive shape. So the distance from the front to the back was a lot less than Brighton. So rather than being on the edge of the Brighton box, like they were, Gakpo and Salah were getting pulled into, who was it, Colwill and Dunk, was it, and the keeper, you know, against Chelsea and Wolves, Gakpo was what, midway through the, midway inside the half, closer to the centre circle probably than the goalkeeper. So I just sort of, but I mean, overall, do you think that's the right decision as well? To get more compact.
I think last pod we said you either stick with a high line, change it, get reduced to the age of the side so they can run a bit, and you can carry on pressing, or you change one of those. You know, you stop pressing, you play a deeper line, and you keep the old player. So I think he changed the age of the midfielders, whether that's meritocracy or just playing. I think he made them braver. I think they actually played a bit higher against Chelsea than they had done against Brighton. Mm. And then he reduced the front line, but he also put a player in a press. So I think he solved all three of those in a defensive way. So he made the pitch a lot more compact, as you say, by dropping the lines closer together. And also by not the right side of centre midfield, which has been a problem for us for, I would say, 18 months. And Hendo actually proved that maybe it is him, because he came on and did exactly what he's been doing for the past 18 months, whereas Naby had played a very disciplined role. Mm. By having the eights playing more disciplined closer to our six, we made our shape more compact.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a trade-off in that. I'm not sure, but I think definitely. We kept the high line. We reduced the top line down because it was a mid block. I think you tucked in there was a definite not to go as high in the press. It was they would come out a bit and then we would press. Yeah. And then we made the middle more compact so it wouldn't go through. So all of that enabled us to have a better off-ball performance. I say that with a caveat.
Yeah. No, I agree. It was better, though. It definitely was better. But
there's a massive red wall of heat on your head. Exactly where you're talking about.
Yeah.
Across their half, in between the middle of the edge of the penalty area and the edge of the centre circle. And the other factor, we conceded the most shots ever against Brighton from failed presses. In this game, zero shots conceded. Hey.
Yeah, and efficiency was decent as well, Rosie, to be fair, and again in this one. And we actually, Gags said, to be fair, the pressing structure was better, even though it was deeper. You know, we actually had seven shots from pressing. Okay, it was only a total of 0.55 XG, but Gags said the whole structure of the team and the press, even though it was a deeper press mid-block, was better to then counter-attack on Chelsea if we did manage to win. So
the press was the success of the game, wasn't it? It has to be considered that compared to the Brighton game. We've had better games pressing, but in comparison with that Brighton game, this was a success. To not concede any shots is absolutely huge.
Yeah,
and you know, we're making judgments here. Like this is a new manager, a new team that's like needs replacing totally.
I was going to ask you, like, Si, because I was going to ask you something similar, that, you know, we haven't had much credit for any of the coaching staff this season, but finally it looks like maybe the penny has dropped and they've actually gone away and thought, there's lots of problems here. We need to make changes, and we need to make big tactical changes. And that's, it's the first time I can recall it for a long time.
Yeah. I'm... Our problems are attributed to, largely, they're attributed to the owners not buying new players when we've chosen to keep giving new contracts to old players.
Yeah.
So now our team is aged. The average age of the team is 2.5 years older than it was 2.5 years ago when we were good, which was peak age. The legs have fallen off our lads, and there's not much else we can do about it. And it seems like, I don't know, whatever the cause is that has gotten to this position, right? But this is the first time in my lifetime where not only Liverpool fans, but the world is watching, giving great deal of sympathy to the coaches that have created this. What we're seeing, the performances on the pitch, right? They are totally unlike Liverpool, totally unlike Klopp. And Klopp created Klopp's feeling that it was a vision. You could see it in game one of a shitty team created by Brendan. And he can't do that in this team.
No.
And that now we're given credit for green shoots, supposedly, of blocking up spaces.
Yeah.
Like you would do to fucking Norwich.
Yeah.
I'm just not ready to give credit out for that.
No. It is mad what, you know, how low the bar is, isn't it? It's crazy.
It really is. And
but
and
the problem is
almost asking for credit for it.
Yeah. The problem is that it'd make a pretty rubbish podcast if all we did was come on here and rant.
Yeah, I think it's a genuine improvement from the Brighton game, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's a small step. It's only the pressing, Dan. It's not the attacking patterns.
No, it's not the outcomes, apart from the results.
Yeah, and the energy was better. And yeah. So, okay, quick word on the rematch then. Right, we've got to show this team of upstarts, right, that we've learned from this. And we are not a bunch of mugs. And we are Liverpool, right? We've got to go there, and we've got to go toe to toe with them, and we've got to win, right? We can't be, if we turn in another performance like we did in the league, we're finished, aren't we?
Do you think it's possible
to win at Brighton?
Well, I was going to say what I mean. This is it. We're like talking about winning at Brighton is like climbing Everest now.
Yeah, but I do you know. We talked about it last week.
For this team,
I don't think Brighton are this brilliant. Like they could dominate everybody, as shown by what they're playing the next game straight after us. Right? It's just that we suit them like 2 years ago. Bournemouth suited us, or Arsenal suited us. And I don't know what we can do to match their physicality, and their physicality is what dominated us.
Well, I agree with that side of things, the physicality, right, for sure. However, one thing we can do is stop bloody falling for Brighton's, what they wanted us to do, which was to press them right up to the edge of the box and into the box and then just pass through us. We can repeat the Wolves and Chelsea tactics would be a much better starting point.
Well, that'd be a litmus test, wouldn't it? To see whether or not we can force Brighton to play out wide.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, if they force it to play to Grice, might be an interesting test for our ability to deal with the ball aerially in our box.
Mm.
But I'm still, that would be a litmus test for us of these tactics. Can we force Brighton, who rip through the middle of our park at will, through ball after through ball, to play out wide? If we do that, I would say it's a small step. I agree with Si, we're probably giving too much credit to green shoots, but we haven't anything for the whole season, so we've got to give something somewhere.
Yeah.
Are we playing? When are we playing the next?
Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
At Brighton.
Yikes.
In the cup.
You got a chance for players to be back, right? So Trent should be back if he trains this week. Nunes is back.
Well, you've got to put Trent back up against Mitoma, who absolutely destroyed him.
Yeah, but then the flip side to that is you get Milner, he'll get destroyed by him.
Yeah,
and true. Milner will get a yellow card early, and Milner offered us probably very little going forward, whereas Trent, in the areas that Milner got into at the weekend, would have produced some balls.
And if you play Trent alongside Bacetic,
exactly, and Naby, it would create they will work together on that. I see no reason why Trent can't do what Milner did in those pressing zones to create that area. I've seen no reason why they can't do that. The other side, I think you'll gain more because Elliot was too deep against Chelsea. And as much as we might think Nunes has got to have something to work on off the ball, just playing higher will help us out attacking wise. Because he won't be on the toe of Thiago. You're going to fancy
Nunes against Pascal Gross, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Right. And, you know, and Estupinian's a good, you know, he's a good player.
Yeah.
But, you know, Mo Salah. You know, for God's sake, it's Mo Salah.
And that's what I'm saying. So there's, I think if we do this and stop them going through in the middle of the pitch, which is what they did at their place.
So Gakpo drop in the defensive nine again, just ahead of midfield. Yeah, okay, for a start. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do we have, what do you think the midfield is? It wouldn't surprise me if we, in the convoluted way, Henderson found his way back into the team.
If that happens, we lose.
Yeah, because we don't have any of the discipline that we've talked about, at least in these two games. And we just did the whole ability to protect the centre and stay together.
I can see if Fab came in and played the six, I think we'd be all right.
I'd just play Bacetic.
But I'd play the three to play against Chelsea, I really would.
Yeah.
I don't really care for the Bacetic thing yet. But I'm always against kids, it seems, and I don't even know why.
He's more mobile on the ball than Fab's been. If Fab suddenly turned the clock back and was somewhere near the Fab he was, I'd play him.
Yeah, I still think we get caught up in that, right? Is the mobile six only really matters when you get caught.
And that's fair.
And not getting caught is, I think he's better at not getting caught. In the first place, I think he's better at keeping the ball. So, our best chance at beating not Brighton per se, but the a team that have the intensity of Brighton with the technical players through the middle of the pitch is high possession control.
Yeah,
and also the half against Brentford. I know we had a lot of the ball, but Fab, Thiago, and Naby, I thought looked pretty good.
Rosie, just on the Brighton game, I mean, one of the things that we did touch on there was that, you know, Adam Lallana gave Fabinho the runaround, didn't he?
Yeah.
I
definitely don't want to see anywhere near the same midfield that we saw against Brighton.
Would you want to see the Chelsea midfield against Brighton?
Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
Change Trent for Milner and Nunes for Elliot.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
It'd be fine with me. I would love for you guys to be right about Bacetic.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's going to be a well beat, I just think he's.
Yeah, I think you've got to say. You've got to say, you won the last round, you got us this far, you got a clean sheet in the league.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Go again. Well,
yeah.
My issue is the chain, like when Bacetic comes off, we do some mad stuff with the subs.
You bring on Fab. And,
yeah, but he didn't do that, did he?
Why didn't he just sub Elliot for Nunes?
I don't get it. Because Naby couldn't play another 90, is that why?
It's bonkers.
But at one point, we had a left winger playing centre midfield, a forward playing left wing, and a left wing playing forward.
It was a bit of a mess, wasn't it?
I was like, what's going on? Yeah, and then you wonder why Chelsea ripped through the middle of the park and the new fella got two amazing chances down the right channel.
Yeah. Right. So are we, there's a replay, isn't there, Rhodesy? For this one, the fourth round of replay?
Is there really?
Oh, there isn't.
I think if there's a draw, there's a replay. I think.
Oh. That's all I want.
A replay.
No draw.
No draw. Okay. Are we going to win, Moti?
I think we might draw.
Si?
Don't care.
But
do you know what? I take a clean sheet now.
Yeah, clean sheet. Another 0-0.
No, I don't care because you just keep as long as we keep building something of what we're doing, better than nothing.
Well, if nothing,
Yeah, a couple of big chances would be nice, Dan. That would be nice.
It would. It
one big chance.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
I think, yeah. Nothing envisages our fall from grace more than the last 15 minutes of this podcast. Anyway, that has been your Anfield Index Under Pressure podcast for this week. We will be back after the Brighton on Tuesday, the 1st of February? Tuesday the 31st. We will be back. Until then, up the fucking Reds.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.